we're talking about gaming addiction here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The World Health Organization says gaming disorder is now a medical diagnosis. WHO says gaming becomes an addiction when it interferes with everyday life. But the video game industry is calling on the WHO to rethink the decision. According to Pew Research, about 2 in 5 adults in our country say they often or sometimes play video games. Are you a gamer? How much time do you spend playing video games? And what games do you like? Why do you play? We're at 800-642-1234. Dr. Peggy Scallon is a psychiatrist. She is medical director of the Adolescent Mood Disorders Program at Rogers Memorial Health, Oconomowoc. Dr. Scallon, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. It's good to be with you, Kate. Appreciate
well,
it.
Well, help us understand, what is a gaming disorder? What does it look like?
Yeah, so a gaming disorder is when a person continues to use games an excessive amount to the point that it's overtaking other parts of their life. So there are negative effects to the gaming, but they continue. It might be affecting their relationships. For kids, it might be affecting school. They're sleeping less. They're not getting proper nutrition or physical activity, and yet they persist in it. They have a hard time limiting their own use.
And this can go on for some time, for months, maybe even years?
Well, in order to meet criteria for the gaming disorder as proposed by the ICD-11, use has to be for more than 12 months. So there is a time criteria for that. But usually for kids nowadays, the iGen, they have almost a lifelong pattern of screen use, particularly gaming.
And these are young kids this generation, is that right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we know that toddlers, sometimes even infants, are using screens. So it's as young as infancy.
Dr. Scallon, what can playing video games do to our brains? What is the impact there?
Yeah, so there's the effect of the games themselves. They're compelling, they're colorful, they're dynamic. And, you know, experts, teams of people develop these games to make them super compelling for kids. And so they're exciting, they're interesting, they're hard to put down. And for kids who are also trying to learn, you know, reading books, doing spelling words, math problems, it makes some of the daily life less interesting. So they get used to a high stimulation diet of, you know, input coming into the brain that's dynamic and exciting. So there's the effect of the games themselves. They also often have adversarial content. You're fighting an enemy, or someone's coming at you and you have to defend yourself. So to be bathed in that for many hours a day, every day, for months and years on end, that can be problematic. There's often violent content, which can be, you know, a desensitization to some of the games. And then there are the opportunity costs. So what are kids and adults not doing when they're using the games? What other sort of healthy activities are falling to the wayside?
Oh, there are trade-offs when you're doing this much gaming at any one time.
Sure. Kids, when they do a self-report of how many hours they spend on screens per day, even self-report more than 9 hours a day, and by some estimation, it's even more than that. So, you know, they're immersed in a steady diet of screen time, and so there's a lot they're not doing.
Do we have any clear notion of how many hours of screen time should children be exposed to a day? Are there any hard numbers?
Yeah, so the American Academy of Pediatrics recommends no more than 2 hours a day of screen time. Now, I think that's it's challenging, you know, if we even think about our own use as adults or navigating, you know, life with the use of phones. Most people are on their phones more than that, but that is the recommendation, and that's borne out by good medical evidence and studies.
What about adults? What do you recommend as far as a daily limit for adults in screen time?
Yeah, there's no limit, mm-hmm. per se, put on adults, and there's really no recommendation that's been made. But, you know, I think we can extrapolate what we know about kids' use and you know, think about some of that same number.
We're talking about gaming addiction with psychiatrist Peggy Scallon. She is medical director of a residential care program for young adults with depression and other mood disorders at Rogers Memorial Hospital. Have you ever thought you may be addicted to video games? Do you think it should be a mental health disorder? How have video games impacted your life? What ones do you play? Do you play with others? We're at 800-642-1234. You can join the conversation by email at ideas@wpr.org. Dr. Scallon, what changes now that the World Health Organization has categorized video game addiction as a mental health disorder?
Yeah, so there's more recognition of the disorder. If you can write it down on paper, people start to discuss it more. There's more recognition that it is an actual problem. People can bill for it, so it becomes a clinical condition that people can start to develop treatments around, treatment facilities around that. And parents are really asking for that. And then in addition to that, there are more studies and people start to be able to gather data about, you know, these disorders in terms of the what it is, what the prognosis is, what effective treatments are out there.
What might treatment facilities look like? I understand there are some inpatient programs right now for teenagers.
Yeah, so usually for most of these folks, there's the need to just unplug, you know, to stop use and to really assess what the feelings are, what happens when you stop using electronics. It's very uncomfortable for some of these kids to stop using. And so first of all, there's usually a process of unplugging. And then after that, there should be or start to be some recognition of the need to reintegrate appropriate use. So together with parents, they may talk about games that are not healthy for that child or apps that are not appropriate or have gotten the child into trouble. And then to start to really set up limits around use, time limits, etc.
Might those withdrawal symptoms parallel in any way other addictions?
Sure. It's very uncomfortable for people to withdraw. They sort of crave the use. They become uncomfortable, anxious, preoccupied with getting them back, and they can become agitated and irritable. I've seen kids whose parents have locked electronics in the van at night because kids were gaming all night long, and kids can become, you know, physically aggressive with parents. Even sometimes I've seen kids pull a knife on a parent in order to get those things back. So there's the craving and the preoccupation with getting it back.
There are some gaming organizations and the American Psychological Association saying there isn't enough evidence here to determine that video game addiction is a mental health disorder. Should this be diagnosable?
Yeah, so, you know, the gaming organizations have an interest in not setting limits around the use of gaming. You know, when people actually recognize how much these are being used, I think it can be stunning. So it's not surprising that they're blocking efforts to gain more information about this or study. And so I think we'll learn as we start to gather data and treatment and more you know, information about the patterns of use. We'll see what it is.
We're talking about gaming addiction with Dr. Peggy Scallon. She is a psychiatrist at Rogers Memorial Hospital, Oconomowoc. She heads up the Adolescent Mood Disorders Program. Have you ever thought you could be addicted to video games? Do you think it should be a mental health disorder? How have video games impacted your life? Are you a parent of a gamer? Do you have trouble limiting video game play? Join in at 800-642-1234. Tweet us, WPR Mornings. Back in a minute here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about video game addiction on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The World Health Organization last month officially voted to include an entry on gaming disorder to its international classification of diseases. And this is concerning when you consider the number of people who play video games. According to Pew, 97% of teen boys and 83% of girls are gaming on some kind of device. Do you work for a gaming or entertainment company? What do you think about classifying video game addiction as a mental health disorder? And what concerns do you have? Are you a medical provider? Do you see patients with video game addiction? Join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Psychiatrist Peggy Scallon is our guide. She is medical director of a residential care program for young adults with depression and other mood disorders. Dr. Scallon, why do you think that having an addiction to video games is now considered a mental health disorder, considering we have other addictive behaviors like binge watching Netflix?
Well, I think the numbers are pointing to that. We have a pattern of use with screens in the world, really, that is more than 9 hours a day. And so that's more time than kids spend in school or doing any other activity. And I think we all have recognition that childhood has changed. You know, the patterns of interactions have changed, both for young kids and play, as well as for teenagers and even adults.
You've worked with patients who play video games too much, or what would some call, having a video game addiction, how has that impacted their life? What have you seen?
Yeah, so I've seen this a lot. I've seen where gaming is the only thing that kids are interested in. It's the only thing that, you know, parents will say. It's the only thing that makes them happy. And they're also very angry and irritable when forced to unplug. And so it leads to a lot of tension in families, and also, you know, kids stop doing other things. The opportunity cost is huge. So homework can suffer, school attendance, chores, family activities, and this becomes the primary focus in a child's life.
There's often this misconception that video games are played by teenage boys exclusively, really, when you think of video games, but men and women of all ages play. Should all people who play video games be concerned about, you know, developing, you know, going over some limits or going out of control?
Yeah, well, I think it's clear that, you know, for most people, this is not a disorder. Gaming behaviors are enjoyable and fun, and, you know, they're not problematic for the vast majority of people who use them. So, you know, I want to be clear about that. But for folks who, you know, find that it overtakes other interests, they avoid other things that they're supposed to be doing, that's the population that we're most concerned about here.
We're talking with Dr. Peggy Scallon. She's a psychiatrist at Rogers Behavioral Health, and she's medical director of a residential care program for young adults with depression and other mood disorders. You can join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you work for a gaming or entertainment organization? What do you think about classifying video game addiction as a mental health disorder? And what concerns do you have? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Scallon, you see screen time as an issue on a scale, you know, that covers a lot of ranges. What do screens do to us in our brains? I mean, what is the concern there?
Yeah, so the screens are so compelling, as we all can see groups of kids standing around together all looking at their phones, that they can take us out of the moment. And, you know, they're a big distraction. And so we feel more disconnected from each other. Kids' rates of loneliness, of anxiety, depression are really skyrocketing. And it does seem to be since, you know, about 2012, there was a real change in these trends. And that was the time that more than half of kids started to have a mobile device with them at all times. And so we're seeing that it is affecting kids' rates of, you know, depression, anxiety, suicidality. Kids are getting less sleep, and they're less in the moment.
There is this new online survey that's just surfaced from researchers. It examines their gaming behavior alongside their psychological well-being. And we have a link to this at our website, WPR.org, on the Morning Show page. You know, you might not have seen the survey, but it can take about a 20-minute test to measure gaming addiction. Do we have a test of any kind that we can use on patients to measure gaming addiction?
Well, we use a clinical interview. We don't use a specific assessment tool. Hopefully, with the ICD-11 adoption, we'll start to develop more of these instruments to be able to develop norms and classifications. But right now, we use a clinical interview to make that assessment.
Well, let's take a call now. Let's go to Eli joining us from Eau Claire. Hi, Eli.
Hi. I'm a moderate gamer. I'm also a millennial. And growing up with a bunch of different games was the biggest factor in how I feel like was an achievement in my the area of my expertise, like such as the communication. But as my question is, how do I also persuade my child, now that I'm a parent, who also likes gaming, and he does it really well as to moderate and not moderate, but as how do I actually give it like as part of an esports kind of deal?
Eli, thanks for the question, and it sounds like, you know, Eli is trying to teach healthy, you know, a healthy way of approaching video games in more of a sporting context. Dr. Scallon?
Yeah, Eli, that's great. How old is your child?
He's 4.
Oh, 4 years old. How fun. Well, as you know, kids really follow the interests of their parents. If they see parents enjoying an activity, they want to do it too, and they want to be together with their parents. So I think you're on the right track when you are trying to demonstrate, you know, gaming's fun, and there are other activities too, and we do that as one form of entertainment. And I would suggest, you know, you keep a robust and well-rounded set of activities. Some are physical, some can be gaming, some are social, you know, and other kind of creative pursuits. And I sounds like he'll follow suit. It sounds like he really likes to follow your lead.
Eli, how do you decide to choose which video games your child is exposed to? What does that look like?
A lot of it is actually due to past experience on the game. A lot of times I would actually venture out the game myself first and to determine whether or not if it's adequate, because a lot of those PG or 13 type of rating doesn't coexist with the mental level of what I feel is adequate for my child.
Oh, so you try it out first.
I try it out first, and then figure it out whether or not if it's adequate or if he's capable of understanding it.
Dr. Scallon, that sounds like a good idea, a test run.
Absolutely. Sounds like you're really attuned to him, and you're not going to take a rating system from, you know, take their word for it. You're going to do it yourself and see what's appropriate for your own child, knowing him so well. That's great.
Dr. Scallon, in the time we have left with you, it seems inevitable that screens are here to stay, but how can we set boundaries as parents for how much time kids play video games and how they prioritize video games in their life? What's reasonable?
Yeah, well, I think you're absolutely right. They are here to stay, and, you know, we need to help kids learn how to regulate. And so I think, you know, first and foremost, setting time limits is really helpful for kids. We can end up, you know, kids can end up using a lot more than they think they are. So even documenting or journaling how much time they're actually spending doing that, and then setting some time limits around that. Also setting some limits for where the screens are used. And so the American Academy of Pediatrics is really clear that there shouldn't be screens in bedrooms of any kind. Kids shouldn't go to bed with their phones. They shouldn't have televisions or gaming systems in their phones. And they should be in a public part of the house. And that will really, you know, help parents monitor their use and the time and their awareness of kids. So they should set limits around those. And then parents should maintain expectations for kids to do all those healthy things they always should have been doing, like school, homework, chores, you know, learning how to drive, get a job, be healthy and fit, get enough sleep, nutrition, all those good things. Those expectations should remain.
Well, Dr. Scallon, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Kate. It was great to be with you.
Dr. Peggy Scallon is Medical Director of the Adolescent Mood Disorders Program at Rogers Memorial Hospital, Oconomowoc. And for disclosure, Rogers Behavioral Health is a business sponsor of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up, we talk with the recipient of an AmeriCorps Service Award for his work on college readiness programs and his advocacy for students of color at UW-Eau Claire. Are you a student of color here in Wisconsin? What challenges or barriers do you face in your school, and how do they affect your education? Join in with your experiences at 800-642-1234. Let's talk about this right after this news update here on the Ideas Network.